Audrey Hargreaves! Brilliant! Stunning free kick from Owen Hargreaves. And it may well be the goal which puts Arsenal out of the title race once and for all.
Well, what a moment that could be for Arsenal and for the Championship. Arsenal out, United taking pole position. And what an execution that was.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the United Podcast. I'm Sam Homewood and with me are...
David May.
Helen Evans.
Hey, there we go. Helen, I feel like you should have gone first because politeness. That's not your fault, matey.
No.
We didn't plan this. It just happened. Right, Owen Hargreaves today.
Yep.
That's exciting, isn't it?
Did you set this up, Sam?
Sort of.
Yeah.
I got his phone number for Davide Petrucci because he wanted to message him. And then obviously we had his phone number then. So... take advantage. So that's sort of how this came about.
Well, how many episodes? Well, I was just going to say, how many episodes are we in? This is the first one Sam's ever
watched. Sam's actually produced something.
Claiming Tom Heaton because I messaged him on Twitter when he signed and said this will make a great podcast. And he said yes.
But well done, Sam.
Thank you.
Well done.
Pretty smart.
What do you want?
Well,
a good podcast.
You can
have the sweets as well, by the way.
You did get a new pair of trainers though, Sam.
I did. You like those?
Oh, yeah, no, I kept showing them on the TV. Yeah,
very posh.
Thanks very much. Right, Hargreaves.
Yeah.
Maisie, do you think defensive midfielders are underappreciated?
Not as much as defenders, is what you're going to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Sullivan has just joined the chat. Yeah. Just bought badges. We're in the middle, Sully.
Just walking.
Any chance?
We're recording. Carry on.
Can we keep that in?
Absolutely. Sully, you're a nightmare. Anyway.
Are defensive midfielders underestimated?
I would say. Well, yes.
Not as much as defenders.
Not defenders, absolutely. That's because.
People will talk about great defenders. They talk about Rio or Vidic, for example, or Pally or Stam or Bruce. But it's only now people will talk about like N'Golo Kante or Michael Carrick and say these are great players or a Claude Makélélé. But historically, not a very fancied role, I reckon.
Well, it's only the last probably 10 years that. They've come into the fore, hasn't it? Like the number 10, you know, the deep line six, whatever it is, all these cliches that come out. Brian Robson would have been a defensive midfielder. Keane would have been a defensive midfielder. Scholesy would have been. But yet they still got forward and scored loads of goals. It's just a cliche that's come out, so.
Oh, you're angry. What's your thoughts on Owen Hargreaves as a player, though, Maisie?
Do you know what? When he came to the club, I thought it was, obviously, we didn't know that much about him. But, you know, the games you did see him playing for Bayern and obviously England, you knew he was going to be a top, top player. It's just a shame that it was only here for a year. His United career was cut to a year of playing.
Yeah,
he's otherwise, injured. He could have been an absolute top draw player. Really could. 27. That is your peak.
It's really cruel.
It is.
But equally, much more of a career than everybody, you know, the 99.9% of... footballers that want that career.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he'll say sometime in the interview that, you know, if you give him 10 years playing in the highest level, you'd take that, you know. But it's the other 6 or 7 years that, as you're getting into your peak,
that's probably the ones you think about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what could have been.
Yeah. Well, should we get him on?
Yep.
Here's Owen Hargreaves.
Owen Hargreaves, welcome to the Manchester United podcast. We are delighted to have you here. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I mean, sun shining in Manchester. I mean, that's always a good thing. But yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Have you had a couple of weeks off with football season off?
I'll be honest. You know, when we've always played, you know, the season's always been so crazy and so hectic. You're just desperate to get away. I think we always kind of got about 3 weeks. But now being on the other side of it, the podcast side, it's been pretty intense. You know, I was at the Europa League final, I was at the Champions League final, the Premier League season was crazy. There were so many games, but the kids are still in school. So, you know, you kind of, before we used to just go away and now you kind of got to work around the kids. You know, my son had a sports day yesterday, so I had to go watch that. And
did he win?
He did pretty good, to be fair. You know, it's one of them. He's pretty fast. He's 7, and I just said to him before the race, he said, I'm going to get second. There's a boy faster than me. And I said, well, it doesn't matter, buddy. Just give me your best. Whatever your best is, just do your best, and that's good enough. And then he won both his races, and his face, you know, he was just so delighted. So he was trying to race me to the car. He said, come on, Dad, I'll race you to the car. which is going to beat me because I can't run any. I can't run anymore.
I was just going to ask, was there a dad's race?
No, I think there used to be a dad's race, and then people started bringing spikes and
what?
Things. Yeah, and then they had
what
to.
What kind of skill is this?
Then they had to sack it off because some of the guys were taking a bit too serious. So,
dad was a footballer, wasn't he?
My dad grew up in Bolton. Yeah, so he. He played for, Farnworth and Bolton, Wigan. That's his team, Bolton. And that's how I ended up playing football. You know, I was the youngest of three boys. My dad played semi-professional in Canada. And basically, football was just in the family. My dad always played. Even when I moved over to Germany to play football, my dad was still playing with my mates. And they'd be texting me saying, your dad's still the best player in the games. Football was in the blood, you know, and I just... My dad played, and wherever you played, I would just be on the side. You know, it was probably the same for me. You're just there, and whatever the older ones are doing, my dad and my brother, I was just kicking the ball on the side. So football was always kind of was in the family.
Do you see that now with your son?
Yeah, I mean, look, the kids are going to be, they're going to find their way, whatever it is. My son obviously likes to move. He's got a talent to move and stuff. And I think my job, like my dad, is just to give him as many opportunities as I can, and then he'll find his way. Whether it's football, whatever it is, let him do as much as he likes, and then he can kind of pick his spot, what he thinks suits him.
Does he have a team?
The problem is, see, he's got a few cheeky friends at school, and their dads, so I remember his first teacher, she was a big Tottenham fan, and so she never really said anything. And then I remember one day, it was my son's birthday, he was only 4 or 5. And she said to me, I'm disappointed in you. You know, it was Mark's birthday. You didn't get a Tottenham kit. I said, well, why would I get a Tottenham kit? And pretty much every day when I had dropped him off, she had basically said something about Tottenham to him. And so she was like drip feeding him. Well, I didn't really know. Don't know her name. She was really nice. But basically every time I go to the school, somebody's trying to get him into a different team. You know, like his one of his mates or, at that age, they're very... They change their mind every 10 seconds. Yeah. But it's funny because everyone thinks it's like funny that, they talk about another team, whether it's, City or Liverpool or Chelsea or something. So I'm trying to teach him that, look, buddy, it's not that easy. You know, your dad played for Manchester United. So we kind of got to go there, buddy.
So tell us, we know, obviously we see you in the media. Is there anything else going on in your life, or is it just the media at the moment? And did you ever think that you would go down that route?
No, never. I never thought about it for a second. I remember I was in the dressing once at Old Trafford, and I remember the tellies were on. I forgot who was on. And Rio was there and Gary Neve was there. And we had a chat about I think who was on, basically. And I remember Neve saying to me, you'd be good at that because you kind of say it as it is, but without, I always think, it's not personal, when we're doing, I'm not, I do that like I played, my dad used to always say to me, just give me your best out there. So when you go and cover the game, it's not, a lot of the boys, I know they take it personal but we're getting paid to do a job like you guys, and you can't, I'm not a big fan of the guys that wear their shirt when they're doing the job. I understand that you played there for a really long time, but in the end, you got to critique the game. There's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. Some people play well, some people don't. And I always see it from a player's perspective. I try and see it from a player's perspective. So if somebody were to give me an advice or a bit of analysis, I would respect that. I don't like when people say daft statements and bold statements for headlines. I don't agree with that. But if somebody's there to try and point out something that could maybe help you next time, I think that's fine. But I think the problem is in this culture, it's very headline and tabloid, And I never wanted to get in for that. I kind of fell into it. But I enjoy seeing the game from the other side. But sometimes I think a lot of the guys, especially after a season like this, where, there's been a lot of criticism and, probably rightly so, because it's been probably below standard, well, to say at least. And I think sometimes as a player, maybe, you got to take it on the chin, The fans know what they're watching, the history of the football club and the people that have played here. I remember when I first signed for United, the first thing I did was I bought Roy Keane's book and Brian Robson's book. And I just, not that I just wanted to I knew what it was, but I just wanted to learn a little bit more. It's difficult because when you come into a dressing room, you don't want to ask the boys questions. You don't want to pretend like you're a fan or you're, you know. So I'm sure everybody comes the same with, you know, I'm just going to get my head down and, you know. But really, in a way, I think it would be great if the club, you know, when a new player signs, that they sit down with Brian Robson or they sit down with these guys and say, look, you know, this is what it is. Don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, I wish, if I think back about it, I wish I would have, you know, once in a while, gone out to the pub with Brian Robson or something after a game, you know, if they would have watched the game and said, tell me what you think. And, you know, because there's so many amazing icons that play for this football club and everybody wants the best for it.
Not sure you'd have lasted long with Robbo.
But you know what? I just think the history of this football club makes it so special.
Absolutely.
These guys. And I think that's what, when you see a season like this, you know, everybody watching Real is not up to the standards that the previous have set, you know, and nobody expects everybody to win all the time. You know, that's going to be unrealistic. But, you know, I think those guys set a standard and these kind of fans, I think the fans have been amazingly patient with, you know, everything that's gone on. So hopefully this season's going to be a better one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're all hoping for. Let's talk about where this all started for you then, because I know you mentioned you're the youngest of three brothers, but you're the only one born in Canada, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So you had the choice, I guess, when you were younger and you were interested in sport, because I know you're interested in basketball and American football, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the typical North American sports.
Yeah.
You could have represented any of those countries and Wales,
yeah,
right? So how did England become the choice for you? Was it always that way? Did you always feel English?
It's pretty complicated. I'm an outcast of my own family, really. I mean, my dad's English, born here. My oldest brother was born in Wales. My middle brother, Neil, he was born in England. So I'm the only one pretty much in the history of my family that wasn't born in England or Wales. But obviously my dad worked in the steel industry and he got a job opportunity in Canada. So they went to Canada and obviously being born there, I could represent Canada. And I'll be honest, you know, football was never really on the cards for me as a young kid. You know, growing up in Canada, there's no professionals really. So I always just played. And then I remember a guy saw me when I was 13. His name was Thomas Niendorf. And I was tiny at the time in my neighborhood team. And he said, you know, that I was pretty good. And as I got older, in a couple of years' time, if I was still progressing, you know, he'd call his friends, because he was German, and the coach was a youth coach at Bayern Munich at the time. And I went on trial, and then that kind of started that. So then I went to Bayern Munich at 16, you know, and I remember thinking I was going to be way out of my depth. I remember after 2 minutes in the training session, you know, Maisie knows what it's like. You don't really know your level until you put yourself in the mix. And I remember after like 2 minutes, I realized, you know, I'm doing okay here. And basically that moment was basically how I took my whole career. So I never ever envisioned to make it that far. I never envisioned to get, you know, to Bayern and then to get into the first team. And then in my first year, you know, we had this incredible year where we won the Champions League. And then all of a sudden everybody's like, I was going, who's this kid Owen Hargreaves playing for Bayern Munich? So everybody thought I was German, but I just worked there. And then Wales were ringing me up, and then Canada was ringing me up, and then England was ringing me up. And I was like, I would have taken anyone, you know, just the opportunity to play football. But with my dad being English and being a football man, when you're a young kid, the first thing you want to do is make your dad proud, right? And with my dad being a proud Englishman, even though it was the hardest route, you know, the best team, I just thought, you know, I'm going to swing for the fences. So every time I played, I just tried to, try and make it as hard on myself as possible so I could figure out what my level was. Cause basically I overachieved, you know, in many ways in my eyes. So I was always just trying to, that's why I came to United. You know, I was so, you know, playing at Bayern Munich for 10 years was an honor. It was an amazing football club. But again, I just thought when United came, I thought, right, I got to try another step. So all these little pathways were, none of them was really planned. You think about a lot of these kids now, all their journeys, they try and map it out. You can't plan, you know? So you just got to, you know, do your best, go with it. And then when the opportunities present themselves, you got to be prepared to take them or not.
What was life like growing up in Canada? Oh, enjoy it?
Amazing, yeah. I mean, the winters were cold. It was minus 20, minus 30. But, you know, you get used to that. You know, it'd be minus 20, but it'd be a blue sky and sunny. It was weird. And, you know, you basically lived like two seasons, you know. So the summers were beautiful, it was sunny, and the winter was cold. So I used to come home from school and I used to go straight to ice hockey rink. You know, drop my backpack off. I'd walk to ice hockey rink, play hockey with my mates. I only really came home to eat. You know, that's the only time I was really inside. It was That was the cool thing, I think, about going up to Canada was the fact you got to play all these different sports, yeah. You know, and you had to because of the seasons and stuff.
When did you start playing football then? What age?
I was young. I think I was like 5 or 6.
And then did you get into school team or was it college team or?
No, it wasn't really like that. You just played for your neighborhood. You know, you just
I'm
played
in a good team though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but then we represented my neighborhood, and then you get to a point where I remember my first team, I was like 8 or 9, and we were winning games like 15-0. So my dad's like, this is no good, you know? Yeah. So we moved to the other side of the city in Calgary, and he found this team, and like it was quite a talented team. I mean, there's so many talented kids in Canada, because basically there are no, in Canada's a really young country, so all the people are there from, you know, from England, Scotland, Ireland, Italy, Spain, you know, South America, all around the world. And all those guys, all those people love football, right? So their kids end up playing. So we had, you know, we had this like pretty talented team. And yeah, we just kept kind of, I don't think any of us really knew what we were doing with it. We just played because we loved it.
Yeah.
So where were the scouts from Bayern Munich? Because were you on the radar any other clubs? Because I assume that, at that time, there wasn't many scouts from Premier League teams in Canada.
Pure coincidence.
Yeah.
He was German, and because his contacts, you know, because he was German, his contacts were German. So he rung up his mate who was in the under 14s, I think, at Bayern Munich. And you couldn't do it now. But basically, you know, I went on trial. I think I stayed at his his place.
At 14?
Yeah, I think I was 15 when I went on trial.
Had you been to Germany before?
No, nothing. I knew nothing about. I knew nothing about Germany. But my brother got offered a contract from Bolton when he was 18.
Okay.
My brother was, you know, very talented centre forward, and my dad, when he got the opportunity, my dad wanted to go home and finish his last year of school, high school, and then he went home and he tore his ACL, and then it kind of never really, you know, happened for him. So when I was fortunate enough that I was the youngest, so, you know, when that opportunity came for me after what had happened with my brother, they
just go.
They're like, just go. Yeah. So yeah.
Daunting?
You know, ignorance is bliss sometimes.
You wouldn't have done German at school, would you?
No. Yeah. I mean, back then, I mean, people would probably laugh, but it was like, you know, internet was just kicking off. Yeah. You know, you had that dial-up, that thing, you know, with the AOL, ding, with the ding, 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 ding. You know, I used to have to, I couldn't really talk. I couldn't ring back home, really. You know, I had to go to the phone box with the card and all that. And so I just had to crack on. You know, mm-hmm. I lived on the training ground. There was 12 apartments, and there was a guy from Sweden, a guy from Iceland, myself, and a guy from the Czech Republic, and the rest of them were like German boys, but they were, I mean, Germany's a big country, so they were too far to go home. So in that house, you know, after me was, you know, Schweinsteiger was in there, Toni Kroos was in there, David Alaba was in there. So it was, I mean, football, if you want to play football, you know, I literally lived on the training ground. So they had this block, and I could watch the first team train every day. So for me as a young kid, you know, where I could play, I played football probably twice a week. I played more basketball as a kid because I loved it. And then to play football every day, I mean, I couldn't have asked for any more.
I just think it's crazy that you grew up in Canada and at 15 you moved to Germany, a different continent. Like, we've spoken to loads of players who've made the move from London to Manchester living in digs and find that difficult. Obviously, Quinton Fortune, similar to you, he'd moved, you know, to London, couldn't phone home and found that quite difficult. But that just blows my mind as a 15-year-old. And I'm sure it does for you. Like, your children are 9 and 7.
Yeah.
So can you imagine your eldest in 6 years just moving to a different continent, but different,
you know,
language?
But, you know, I hope they're confident enough that they, you know, that they, if they want to do something, they can. You know, if they're confident enough and they trust themselves, and if they want to do something and they have a talent for something and there's an opportunity there, you know, life presents itself to opportunities. Every day somebody comes up to you and said, oh, you know, my dad played football, my cousin or my brother, somebody could have made it. But the point is, yeah, that's probably correct. But at some point, if an opportunity presents, you've got to take it, you know? And I want my kids to be confident enough to say, yeah, dad, I'll go to do that, you know? So for me, I mean, the hardest part was the language, really, because obviously I couldn't speak any German, and all the boys, the young lads, they wanted to learn English. So Germany used to go in training session. I had a great coach, a Swedish guy, Bjorn Andersson. And, you know, you used to have to go up and shake hands with him, you know, before the session. And obviously the lads used to tell me like the most, you know, rudest things possible. But I thought I was saying something polite to him. So I'd come up, start every session for the first 2 weeks, shaking my manager's hand. And I'd look back and all the lads would be laying on the floor. And he
what
said,
"What were you saying?"
Oh, basically like everything you could, not appropriate probably. But in a way that you get all these little, you know, this like playful banter. I think that's
probably bonding time, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that's probably the hardest thing for us when we finish. You know, people talk about winning stuff and, you know, playing in front of 70,000, but the bond you have with the guys in the dressing room, you're like a big group of brothers. Mm-hmm. And you're a big family, and I think obviously there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of stuff going on, but you all kind of look after each other, and that is really hard to replace when you come out of the game. Mm. So obviously the football, you know, you can't play forever, but I think that bond that you have, you know, chasing all these trophies and all these mm-hmm. things with all these guys from all around the world with different personalities, and it's that's the amazing thing about football.
How did you adapt when you went to Germany to the structure of the training? Because I guess playing in Canada, it was very informal, and all of a sudden it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I was so happy I got to train every day. And I was, you know, I loved it. You know, I was there to play football and I just cracked on, you know, and we learned German a couple of days a week. It was just pure football, you know, so I don't think...
Did you go to school, at the same time there?
Well... We tried, but we couldn't really speak German.
Yeah.
So I remember they put us in this German school, and it was just comedy basically, because we had these four foreign lads, right? The Czech guy, you know, he was a good kid, David Gurk. He couldn't really speak the language, and we were just thrown into this like grade 12 German school, and all these kids, like, we literally didn't have we couldn't speak the language, and we're sat in the back, and our card was always just, yeah, your Bayern said, no, it's cool, we don't have to do anything. So it didn't last very long, because it was just, you know, we couldn't speak the language. So then in the end we focused on the learning German and then playing football, which I hope that they're doing a better job of, you know, getting these guys some education as well.
Mm-hmm. How long were you at Bayern, do you think, before people over here started to notice you and talk about there's an English guy at Bayern Munich?
I think I don't know if Maisie, if you were there, there was a 100-year tournament, I think, before at the old Olympic Stadium. It was Galatasaray, United, Bayern. It was a pre-season one.
Right, okay.
And I played in that. And I think somebody saw my name on the back of the shirt and thought, Hargreaves, what the heck? Was a Hargreaves in Bayern Munich? And then I think somebody recommended me to the FA off the back of that. I think I came on against United. So I think nobody really knew who I was until it happens all of a sudden. You know, I played in the Champions League semi-final against Real Madrid, and then we won and got to the final. And then all of a sudden, you know, people were like, who's this guy? Before that, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really on the radar. I wasn't thinking about national teams and all that kind of stuff. But you play one game like that and, you know, your career changes.
You mentioned feeling like maybe an outsider in your family, because obviously you're the one born in Canada. Did you feel like that maybe with England too, before and after getting in the squad? Because you're the first Englishman ever to play for England who wasn't born in England, and only the second ever to play for England having not played in the English league structure at all. Do you think you got the respect that you deserved? Do you think people were sort of maybe a bit dismissive of your qualities? One, because you were a defensive midfielder and people have rarely fancied defensive midfielders. Yeah. And two, because people maybe didn't watch that much German football and didn't know who you were.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, people are always going to have an opinion on stuff. You know, I remember I sat down with the press, the journals, you know, the back pages, because Adrian Bevington was press officer at the time. And I remember when they announced the squad, I think they booed that I was in the squad.
The press did, right?
So Adrian said to me, look, you know, we were at the Lowry, staying at the Lowry before the World Cup. He said, look, we're going to have a sit down and have a chat. So I was in the room with like these 10 or 12, the Sunday journals, whatever. And so they're like basically not interrogating me, but saying like basically what are you doing here? And I said to them, look guys, with the utmost respect, if you guys are doing your job properly, you wouldn't be asking me that question. Because, you know, if you would watch me play, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't think that. But there's a narrative because I'm this Canadian kid that plays in Germany and because I don't fit in all the boxes that you guys want to tick. But I think if you're really serious about your job, which I hope you are, like I am, then you can critique me after you watch me. But if you guys have an opinion like that, I'm pretty certain you haven't watched me play. And anyway, we walked out and agent says, Jesus Christ, Alan, you know, like you didn't have to. And I said, no, look, I'm, you know, my dad raised me to be super respectful and I am. But if people get something wrong, then, you know, then you gotta, I think you have every right to say it.
Yeah.
And then I remember at the end of that World Cup, you know, I came on and I played pretty well in some games.
2006 we're talking about.
Yeah.
And you were English player of the tournament.
Right. But as I walked out of the mix zone after that game against Portugal that we lost, they all gave me like an applause, all those guys that are, you know, and I like that about the journals, you know, obviously they had an opinion on something, but they didn't really. Somebody had created this narrative that, you know, back to your point, I wasn't really the guy that fit in anywhere because of.
Did you feel English or Canadian?
I felt probably more Canadian.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, we all have our pathways. You couldn't tell my dad he's less English because he spent 20 years.
Yeah, you can't tell where you're born. Like,
No, exactly. Yeah. And you couldn't tell my dad he's less English because he worked in Canada for 20 years. You know, he went there for an opportunity for his family. And he did it, but he's still a proud Englishman, you know. So he instilled that, you know, we grew up in Canada, but in an English home, you know, with Sunday roast and 20 cups of teas from everyone and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, for me, you know, I was a product. I lived 16 years in Calgary. I did 10 in Munich and then I've been in the UK for 15. So I feel super blessed to have a part of, you know, of all these places because I think Canada had a huge part of me. Becoming an adult in Germany was amazing for me, the structure and the discipline and everything I needed for that. But then obviously coming over here, you know, playing for England, I was the only guy that every time we used to meet up with England, I'd say, oh, when are you going to come over and play for an English team? I said, yeah, but we keep smashing you in the Champions League. What's the point? You know, and Munich's a nice city. And in the end, I just wanted a sporting challenge, you know. And when United came in, it was one that I wanted to take. But to go back to your point about, you know, fitting in, yeah, I was probably that guy that was, I always considered myself like Switzerland, you know, I was just like neutral, you know, I could be with everybody in the dressing room because I wasn't clicky with anyone, you know, so Ed and I, we used to sit and have an espresso after a meal and all the English said, what are you doing drinking an espresso? You know, have a cup of tea. And I was like, well, you know, it's okay to have an espresso as well. So Ed and I, we'd sit and chat and then the other guys would play video games. But I felt like I could be with everyone because I didn't really, not that you didn't fit in everywhere. I felt like I fit in everywhere, but I just, I liked the fact that I could be with anyone, you know, and that's in the dressing room. You got everything. Maisie knows, you know, you get all these little cliques of, you know, you get the London boys or you get the foreign boys or the South Americans and it's cool. But I think the dressing room's really great. And I think that's when you have great success, probably like that. 100%. Your teams is when, okay, yeah, you have these little cliques, but everyone kind of finds a way to connect. And I think that is when you get that right, that's when I think the greatness is possible.
So you've mentioned your move to Manchester United. Was that the first opportunity you got to leave Bayern? And why did you choose United? How did that happen?
Well, I think it had to do with, you know, the boys had all seen me with England a lot, you know, and we were training every day for a month and, you know, Scholesy and Rio and going there. I mean, amazing, that's what Nev's like, you know. So obviously, the boys obviously said to the gaffer, look, you know, that I think that guy could probably help us. And then obviously I had a good World Cup and then United came in for me, but it didn't happen because Bayern didn't want to sell me and Bayern don't sell players. And yeah, if United were coming in for me, I just thought, you know, I can't say no. You know, I couldn't say no.
Was it a dream of yours as a child, for example, to play in the Premier League?
Yeah, I remember I came over with some of the Bayern players for one reason. We went to a United Arsenal game. at Old Highbury. I don't know why. And it was like a Sunday. We flew over, and even though I was playing, you know, in the Champions League and for Bayern and with England stuff, I just remember that game and that intensity in mm-hmm. the rivalry of it. And I just remember thinking, yeah, I got to do this. So yeah, I mean, the dream was always, but you never know. You got to wait for the opportunity to come. And then when United came at 26, it just, you know, after 10 years in Munich, I just wanted a different challenge.
Mm-hmm. How did you actually find out about United?
Never rang me. I was in Dubai, and he said, do you want to come to United? and I said, are you taking the
That's typical. That's typical of Nev, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was kind of the start of it.
So you say yes?
I said, well, it was a weird one because the season had just finished and I was literally on holiday. I remember I was like just walking to this hotel and then all of a sudden the wheels kind of get in motion. So I was like, yeah, I mean, who's going to say no? But obviously I was out buying, I had a contract and they weren't really going to let me go that easily. It was quite actually... it was quite a process, actually. Yeah. Too.
But aside from not letting you go easily in terms of their negotiations with United, were they happy for you to leave because you wanted to go, or were they also making it tough for you to get away?
No, I mean, look, no. In the end, nobody likes to lose, right? Mm-hmm. Or it seems like they to lose, so they didn't want one of their players to go. I remember we had this end of season banquet, and we had a funny season that year. I think we finished second or third, and everybody was super off about it. And we remember Karl-Heinz Rummenigge got up on stage and he said, because United had been chasing me for a year, and he said, look, oh, in front of everyone, there's hundreds of people there. He said, look, oh, I'm not happy about it. We're all going to sell you to United and grant your wish, but I'm not happy about it. That was that. That was kind of how he said it. So, you know, they've been talking for quite a long time. But yeah, it was, I don't think
that's how he announced it here, so to speak.
Yeah, in front of everyone.
In front of everyone.
Because basically...
And then you're just sat there thinking...
Happy days.
Okay, cool. You know, and then everybody turned around looking at me going, what is it? I don't know. But I mean, I think it's... At that level, the teams, you know, there's... It's such a delicate balance, isn't it? You know, you want to get better and, you know... And players don't often leave Bayern like that, you know, because, you know, there's not many clubs like Bayern Munich in the world, you know.
What did your teammates say then? Were they happy for you to go because England or?
Yeah, I think some of them were. I mean, like Schweinsteiger and Ferdinand, they were two of my closest mates. So when I came into the first team, the older boys used to make it quite tough on me, you know, just because that's how it was back then. You know, you kind of, that's how you mentored the young guys. And, you know, you have to take it on the chin. And so when they came up, I made a point of making sure their transition was trying to be a little bit smoother. Even when I was here with some of the young kids, was trying to help them transition because it is quite daunting. Mm. So, I mean, it was difficult in a way because we were really close, that young generation. So we had an older generation, Khan and Balak and Mateus and Lizarazu and all those guys that were really successful. And then we had this younger generation. So there was almost like a little gap in between. And we had quite a strong network, but we didn't really have the older heads that we had then. So I think we kind of,
you mentioned some names there, by the way.
No, but it would have been amazing to stick around with them. Oh, we had, I mean,
it's like you with the young pups and then you got the older part of the squad as well. You think, Jesus.
I mean, the players were, I remember Philip Lahm came to the first team for the first time, joined in, and then everyone's like, who's this guy? Get rid of it. You know, it's too small, get out of here. And he went on loan to Stuttgart for 2 years, but that's how it's like, you know, that's what it's like. You're ready or you're not, you know, mm-hmm. Can you perform or can you not? And back then it was super, it was hard, you know, you had to, I remember Otmar Hitzfeld, he gave me one of the best pieces of coaching advice I ever got. So in Germany, you had to basically carry the balls and the bibs and the goals and do all that stuff that the young kids do. I remember I just trained with the first team and all the older lads were just smashing the life out of me because that's how it was, you know, and you just have to just take it and get back up. And I remember all the older lads had gone in and I was picking up the bibs and the balls. And Hitzfeld came over to me and said, look, Owen, the only way this works is if they hate you. If they hate you, that means they respect you mm-hmm. because you're trying to take one of their spots. And he said, every time you come out here, you got to go for the jugular on everyone. But off the pitch, you got to, you know, be respectful. You got to open the doors and you got to carry the balls and the bibs. He said, I can't support you anymore because I'm with the old guys. Because if they see me, I'm not on your side of the, I'm on your side of the fence, I'll lose the dressing room. But just keep doing what you're doing, you're gonna be just fine. So from that moment on, you know, I had to piss off all the old guys on the pitch. But then I remember after about 6 months, Effenberg, you remember, he smashed me in this training session. And then he put his hand out, picked me back up. And he said, you're going to be my successor. You earned the right. But that, you know, that was months and months in the working. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it was. And in a way, I didn't want to, it wasn't that I didn't want to leave Bayern, but you kind of, those young guys coming through. And I think then Philip and Bastian did that. You know, there's a way of helping the young guys without it being so territorial.
People who listen to this podcast will already know that about you because we've spoken to Bastian Schweinsteiger and he had some wonderful things to say about you. Did he clean your boots?
No, he's full of rubbish.
Well, no, I might have made that up. I'm trying to remember. No.
But to be fair, I remember I practiced free kicks. So when I went into the first team and I used to practice free kicks sometimes on my own, just go get a bag of balls. And I remember there's nobody on the pitch and the pitch is here and the youth place where the 12 flats were was kind of looked right onto it. And there's this young kid at the fence, so I'm practicing free kicks and he said, Owen, can I have your boots? Right. He was in the youth team at the time. And that was the first time I met Bessie. And then when he came up to the first team, I just wanted to try and make a point of helping the young guys. So I think that's why we've always stayed in touch, you know, because they're back then there was a different way to lead, you know, that's how it was, you know, that's how we were raised, your dads and your teachers and everybody was, it was quite, you know, do as you're told and it was quite strict. And then all of a sudden now I think this generation, you know, you see it, leadership is different, you know, it's not always about shouting and yelling. It's about kind of, you know, putting your arm around the guys and kind of helping them. And I think that's, I mean, you think about what Bastian and Philip going on to achieve is, you know, winning everything. And I love those two guys because it's, super players, but just great guys as well.
We also had Davide Petrucci on the podcast just a couple of months back. I'm not sure whether you heard that, but he spoke about you in glowing terms. He said, I'm not sure whether Owen knows how helpful he was to me, but he really, really appreciated what you did for him. So what you were trying to do obviously worked on the young players. Were you aware of the impact that you had on those young players at United, for example?
Well, I think it's, you know, if you're injured, it's hard. First of all, it's hard, you know, because you feel like you're in the way and it's weird because your body takes you to that point that carries you to perform in front of all these people. And then all of a sudden it gets taken away from you. And it's such a weird, humbling feeling. And all those boys in that gym together are injured, right? And you're all kind of, morale's down, you know, and all the boys, you can look out on the pitch and all the boys are training, everyone's coming in laughing, joking, and you're stuck in there. And we had the best guy ever, Mike Clegg, in the gym. And he had this just crazy energy about him. And everybody used to just go in there to be around Cleggy because he just did these great sessions. And you'd go in there, Ronaldo was in there, and Rio, and Nemanja Vidic, and Giggsy, and Scalzi. But then also you had the injured guys, and Davide was one of those. And, you know, to see, you know, for us, we had already been established pros and made it. And, you know, these guys are like chasing their dream. They haven't even made it yet, you know. And so to be in there and injured, you could see how hard it was. So it was just about, you know, being positive with them and, you know, keep working. You know, Cleggy was good at that and putting these sessions on. But that's what when I see the game now and I see, I don't care if people play well or poorly, but one thing I think these fans deserve and everybody is just give it your best, you know. And if you're in the gym and you can't play, you know, just give it your best what you got in there at that day. And I think that's, if you just chip away, you'd be amazed at how far you can get. And the guys that chip away and work at it, you know, whether it's in the gym or they're the ones that go so far, because you never know. Don't take days off. You know, like you said, don't take days off because if you're taking a day off, the other guy next to you, he's working, you know, and you're a day behind, you know, and that becomes two and it becomes, and I don't think some of the guys realize what an opportunity they have to just put all you got into your career. It's 10, 12 years, you know, go mad and you got plenty of time to enjoy yourself. But, you know, you don't want to miss this window.
On Davide, before we move on, he said when we were finished that he wanted to be able to get in touch with you to tell you how much.
He texted me, yeah.
So he did do it?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we got you know what? What I liked about him was he was a super talented kid, but he had, you know, raising those. He had this. You need it as a player to like resilience in a way. You know, he had this like good demeanor. I think, you know, football's not the healthiest game in the world, is it? Physically, yeah. Mentally, and emotionally. So, you know, to have all these highs and lows all the time, winning and losing and stuff. You have, I think, as a coping mechanism, you have to become quite neutral to everything. I think we probably all get like that have played the game a long time. I think Davide, he kind of had this. I could see in him that he cared. And I think for some of the older guys, you know, when you see the young guys coming through, you just want to see that it means something to them, you know? And then if it does, then I think we're all happy to kind of to help those guys.
We did go off on a bit of a tangent. So talk to us about coming to United.
How nice is it that we set out though?
The first time you came to Manchester, to Old Trafford, is that clear in your memory?
Well, I remember we played at Old Trafford with England against, I think it was Greece. It must have been a friendly. So we've been at Old Trafford a few times before with United. So it's weird coming to a team that where you actually know everyone.
Yeah.
Do you know, like the guys are so famous that you literally walk in the dressing room and you know everyone. So that made it easy. And obviously Old Trafford made it easy. But I remember playing at Old Trafford against Greece. I remember, I think Steve McClaren, he dropped David Beckham for some reason, and then before the game he said to me, oh, and I'll give you the number 7, you cool with that? And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, just and I remember that was the game, and I think I got man of the match in that game. And Gary Neves' dad, after that game, I think he rang Sir Alex and said, you gotta sign me or whatever. So yeah, I had experience being at Old Trafford, but not yet as a United player.
But also, it's the first time you moved to England.
You know what it was? Because I remember when I came, so Bayern had Audi as a sponsor. It was a big sponsor, being a German brand. And when I came over, at the time, United had Audi. So they, you know, they set up a club car and they're like, yeah, can you drive on, you know, the other side of the road? Because growing up in Canada, it was, you know, it was always on the left side. And then in Germany, it was the same. And I was like, yeah, of course I can, right? Anyway, so the first day, I think I was actually late for the first day because I actually got lost, but I didn't want to tell anyone that I got lost. But I remember coming out of here and right there on that little, I end up going down the wrong side of the road, like first day, because I was living in the Lowry and I took a wrong turn and literally ended up coming in like head onto traffic and people go like, what are you doing? You idiot, you know? And I remember, and then, you know, people are like, well, off or whatever, and I remember somebody saw me, like recognized me, and I was like, sorry, you know. He's like, get on the other side of the road. So then I, for the first week, I had to just make sure I stayed behind someone, you know, so that I make sure I got the right turns. And after a while, you kind of you pick it up, but you know, roundabouts and all that stuff, I'd never done that. I probably should have told somebody that.
You probably should have got like a taxi maybe on your first day, or a driver, or yeah.
But it was different. All the boys were so independent, you know. I came over, I was like a one-man band, you know. So I was living in the Lowry, and you just, you know, you get your head down and you crack on.
There's also the cars the other way around.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I think the rims got smashed up because I wasn't used to being kind of on that side. So I was like, I was there, but I was leaning across. And yeah, there was so many different things that I had to take in, you know. And so it was, you know, it was cool, but obviously I should have come a bit earlier and acclimatized rather than, it's all quite hectic, you know, as players, you know, you finish the season, then you go off and you're on holiday and then you come back. And, you know, I was in the lounge for quite a while. So yeah, there was a lot of things to get used to.
Thankfully, the football's all the same though. Sorry, Maisie, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, what was your conversation with Sir Alex like coming into the club? What did he expect of you?
I remember he just said, I remember him saying, you know, these fans are very knowledgeable, you know. And it was a bit along those lines of, you give them your best, you know, they'll appreciate that. So before I came, the gaffer, we spoke so much, you know, in terms of, and he was one of the driving forces, one of the reasons I wanted to come, you know, who doesn't want to play under Sir Alex, you know. So that was one of the big reasons I wanted to come. And I think the boss had this thing where, you know, we all weren't scared of him, but you didn't want to let him down. Mm-hmm. And that's why everybody played that way. And he had this authority, this natural authority, that everybody respected, which was so important in a dressing room of 25, you know, talented people from all around the world that are well paid. But he controlled the show. I remember my first game, we played City away, and we were losing 1-0 at halftime. Somehow we battered them, but we were losing. Giovanni scored this goal, and I remember we were walking off, and I was in midfield, and Rio was behind me. And as you know, half's finished, so you're a bit tired or whatever. And Rio kind of is jogging by me. He said, "Owen, hurry up! The gaffer's gonna go mental." And I was thinking, I said, "Yeah, but it's half time, lad. And you know, I'm tired. I'll get in there when you know." He said, "Owen, hurry up." Anyway, we get in there, but Rio was basically anticipating, you know, that the gaffer could get upset. And we get in there, and he said the complete opposite. You know, he said, "Look, you guys play great. Don't know how we're losing. Keep playing the way you play. You'll win the game." In the end, we didn't win the game, but I never forget that. Because Rio's quite a character, isn't he? And not short on confidence. And he, just the fact that he did that, knowing what could, it showed how much Sir Alex had, you know, kind of control of the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I think that was so important, because we didn't want to let the boss down, you know, and that's why we all played with that intensity. And I think he demanded that. And I think pretty much the only reason he signed anyone was because he knew they would give him that. And one of the things he said to me, I'll never forget, was, "Oh, we signed you to help us win the Champions League. You can be a part in that." And that's how I saw it too. That was one of the big reasons I want to come. You know, be a part of this team, play at this stadium with these fans and the generation, that group of players we had was just out of this world. I just want to be a piece of the puzzle.
What about your first days training? How was that?
Yeah.
Tough?
No, it was good. No,
did
it last
night? Stitch you up or
no, not really. No, I mean, I was pretty.
I mean, you've come from a team as well, by the way.
I was pretty chill, you know, and I knew a lot of the boys, you know. I wasn't like a mad prankster. I mean, at the time, Gerard Piqué was there, and he was lively, Gerard. He was in on all the pranks. But no, training was amazing. I remember because at Bayern, it was so physical training. I mean, we used to have fights all the time because, you know, it just got super intense, but that's how it was. And I remember one of the first sessions, it wasn't nasty, but it was physical. But that's how we trained at Bayern. And I remember Scholesy said to me, "Oh, and like, you don't need to do that, lad. You play if you play, you know, you don't need to like." And I remember, and it was good.
That's coming from Scholesy.
No, I know, but Scholesy used to do it differently. Scholesy used to give somebody one if he thought they were being a nuisance. You know, like if they were being a bit too flash or, you know, they didn't train proper. You used to know if Scholesy smashed somebody in training, it was because he was probably being a nuisance on some other level. And then Sir Alex knew as well to probably have a word, because Scholesy didn't do it. Okay, he had some late ones in games. But in training, as you probably remember, it was more a message. Do you know what I mean? And I think that was that culture that you had there, you know, with Nev and Giggsy and Scholesy and Rio and all these older guys, these guys were amazing mentors. You know, you probably had it as well. And basically, if you came into that environment, you had to kind of learn and respect kind of the culture. And I think that's what, when I look at the team now, I think that generation, you lost like, you know, you lost Van der Sar, you lost Rio, you lost Vida, you lost Pat, you lost, everybody was a captain of their country pretty much. And all of a sudden, you know, in the span of 2 or 3 years, you lose, you know, all these influential guys, Giggsy and Skull, you lose all these captains, all these leaders. And then you go sign a lot of players, but you need somebody to enforce kind of what the tradition in the history. Mm-hmm. And Sir Alex had that, and David Gill had that. And then you had the whole dressing room that had that. And, you know, I think that was one of the reasons why that team was just so strong. You had just so many people that kind of cared and mentored the next generation.
You've said a few things about your conversation with Sir Alex. One was that the fans here know football. What was your relationship with the fans here like? Because at one point you told us the journalists booed you.
Yeah.
And I know England fans weren't always necessarily the most supportive of you. So when you came here to an English club, did you feel they were on your side?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think it's, you can only control what you control. You know, so when I went on the football pitch, I tried to do my best, you know. And I think if you do that, most fans, they, especially the English fans, they respect that. So, you know, I don't think I ever had any issues with fans in the past. You know, I wasn't that controversial type or anything. So, always had a good relationship with fans. But then I think these fans, you know, they've seen football for, you know, for over so many decades, seen so many iconic players. And I think you just want to live up to, and, you know, respect kind of the history and the people watching. And the least you can do is give it your best. And I think with the players that Sir Alex signed and David Gill, if you gave it your best, you were there for a reason, because you had a talent, you had something to bring to the table. And I think the fans kind of, it was this, you expected something, but also the boys more often not delivered. And I think it created this like mutual appreciation where, you know, when you saw Ronaldo in that year we won the Champions League, you know, it was the first time he played kind of at that level, at that Ballon d'Or level. And I remember being in the gym with him one of the first days, and he was doing these medicine ball sit-ups he used to do with Clegg. And he had done this set. And I remember he was like, he was in pain from these abdominal things he used to do. And he was just laying on his back, and he said to me, "I'm going to be the best player in the world." Just like that. And he hadn't been. And I just remember thinking, you know, that's what it was. You know, the standards were so high. And I just think it was so amazing to be around players that respected the game that much. And people don't realize how much, you know, energy people put into their craft. And then to be a part of that team with the fans of that year, you know, obviously the history of the club is amazing, but it's not often you get a year like that where, you know, 99 and, you know, where everything kind of comes together. And, you know, and then you see now the last few years, the way it's been, it makes you appreciate the good moments.
Did you think he was going to go on and be the best player in the world?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say he's an alien, but he's
an anomaly.
He's so unique because he's, first of all, I don't know how big he is, but he's 6'1", you know, he's super explosive, he's powerful, you know, skills can go both ways, he can jump, he can take free kicks. So basically, if you're going to create someone to play football, it's almost like it'd be Cristiano, because he can literally do everything. But I think what amazed me about him was his work ethic. And there's so many people that come into the dressing room, and you see the guy straight away, and you know who's going to probably do really well and who isn't, just on their habits. And Cristiano had habits which were just out of this world. And so he had the talent to be the best, and then his work ethic matched that. And when you put those two together, then it's unstoppable. And I think that was probably, his talent was obviously so out of this world. But that was the first time he had done it, I think, so consistently, scored that many goals and, you know, really carried the team in crucial moments. And I mean, that team, you know, you think about up front, you had Tevez and Rooney, you had Giggsy and Scholesy, you had Carrick and, you know, in midfield with Scholesy, and then you had Vidic and Ferdinand, you had Pat, you know, Van der Sar. Everybody was one of the best players in the world in his position. Mm-hmm. And then you had Cristiano just playing at this little level above. Which was cool because everybody respected that. You know, everybody respected the fact he was going to be the match winner.
And the Champions League was the natural progression for that team. That was the trophy. Well, you said yourself, Sir Alex said to you when you arrived, that's what we want to achieve. Did you feel a sense of responsibility coming into that dressing room because you had achieved that already? Experience, maybe not so much responsibility, but you'd had that experience.
Yeah, no, responsibility is a good word, because I think we all kind of felt like there was a responsibility to the gaffer. Didn't want to let them down, didn't want to let your teammates down, didn't want to let the fans down. And they've been close, you know, they played against those good AC Milan teams and you know, come up short. And no disrespect, by the way, you had Pirlo and Gattuso and Seedorf and Maldini and, you know, Ancelotti at the helm. So they were amazing. And it's hard, you see in the Champions League, it's hard to win. And they were so close. And you got to get everything right. And I remember the two semi-finals we played against Barcelona. You know, they were pretty good. And you know, everything needs to come together. You know, we were probably one of the first few times we played defensively and on the counter-attack. And it kind of worked, and it worked beautifully. And then obviously we had the final. But we just had such a good team, you know. We had this great group of, everybody was at a good age. You know, people weren't nervous really. Everyone was quite quietly confident. And I remember being in the Champions League you know, in the side when I was 19, when we won, and we played against Valencia in Milan. And the Germans are so different. Everything was very serious and very disciplined and no music and all that. And then our dressing room before the game in Moscow, it was like a club. Honestly, the music was bouncing and the lads are doing all the, you know, whether Scholes is playing two touch or, you know, everyone's doing their own thing in the way that they prepare. But I just remember thinking before the game, I was like, am I going out to play a game? Like, it was just so loose, which is actually a really good thing because yeah. The game is serious enough. But the boys knew when to switch it on and off. And, you know, to finish a season with a highlight like that, you know, together, it's just, you know, it's pretty priceless.
Was it weird playing against Chelsea in the Champions League final?
A little. I mean, it would have been cool if you played somebody else mm-hmm. because, you know, you just know everyone, you know, so well. And obviously we had an England game 3 days later at Wembley against the US with Capello. So, I mean, somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose yeah. and, you know, you're all sat at the table together. But yeah, I mean, we had such a good team, but that Chelsea team was pretty special too. You know, the Frank and Balak and Makaleli and Essien and John, I mean, the list goes on. You know, they had Drogba, they had everything. So it was like two heavyweights going toe-to-toe. And a bit like now where, you know, the two best teams in the world are English. And back then it was, you know, obviously at Barca and Real, but, you know, United and, you know, and Chelsea had such a strong strong group. But yeah, it's weird kind of when you play somebody that you know that well.
How did you feel when it went to penalties and you'd be taking one? Because I remember in 2006, obviously you scored your penalty and everybody's saying, well, of course he did. He's grown up in Germany. There'd be no issue.
Yeah, but we had practice a lot every day. And I always went top left, always.
Which is a really bold technique for a penalty, isn't it?
I just took it like a free kick. I like free kicks, so I just took it like a mini free kick. But I remember as I walked up, and basically all the Chelsea boys I played with, you know, pretty much my whole life. I mean, Joe Cole, Wayne Bridge, Ashley Cole, I'm sorry, they were my England under 21 team, you know, when I was a kid. So, and Balak was with me at Bayern for years.
So they all knew where you were going to go.
Exactly. So as I walked up from the middle line, obviously we're in one line there and they're there. And I didn't realize that they're pointing top left, right? Because we had practice every day at the tournaments and stuff. So I remember walking up and said, those idiots are going to tell Czech, obviously I'm going top left. So as I'm walking up, it's probably like a 10-second walk in it. And I'm walking up thinking, you know, I'm definitely going top left. And as I walked up, I thought, God, the other Czech looks massive in the goal.
It's definitely reaching that.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, it's weird how your brain plays tricks on you. So I thought, I'll just go bottom right, you know, basically. It's like, so basic, just go the other way. And then as I got up to put the ball down, I thought, this is a terrible time to be experimenting. just smash it top left. And if he saves it, he saves it. He's in a Champions League final too for a reason. But it just shows you that moment. My whole career was basically decided on penalty shootouts. So the first Champions League with Bayern, we won on penalties. With United, we won on penalties. And, you know, in the three major tournaments I went out in with England, one was Brazil, where we got knocked out, and the others were penalties against Portugal twice in 04 and 06. So I'd been on the side, two winning sides and two losing sides, and I'd been there mentally in those moments and I understood them. And it was...
Can anything prepare you for that? Apart from...
Experience.
Previous, just that.
And I'd been there and I'd done it. What killed me was Cristiano missed before me.
Yeah.
So when he went up, I thought, oh, cheers, Cristiano. That's the last thing I needed. Because if I miss, it's over, basically, right? But when I went up there, it was amazing how you're able to process all these thoughts in 10 seconds. But what my overriding end of it was a positive one. The fact that do what you do well and hit it top left and, you know, and trust it. But I think you can see on the boys that go up there. And it's normal to have doubt, right? Because you're not sure of the outcome. But you got to give yourself the best chance of think positively, you know, and have a positive picture. Because if you think, if I miss, I'm going to be on front of every paper, or, you know, that's a negative thought. You know, if I miss, I don't think I've sitting with my family and there, everyone's going to be crying. It's going to be, you know, that is quite negative. So I think after being in those experiences a lot, I was able to, you know, control my thoughts. And at 26, I was able to keep it positive.
Stanton as well.
Yeah, just smashed it.
I remember when I came back, Giggsy said, never in doubt. Because we you know, we had practiced literally every day, and every day I hit it, you know, I smashed it.
Did you mean to go that Stanton type?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just think, I don't like that.
Which way did the keeper go? Did he go that way?
I think he went that way, to be fair. But I mean, you're not saving that one, are you? But
no.
But I think I don't like that height where that middle one, because I think the keeper is either low, like the Harry Kane one, mm-hmm. side netting, or the top. So I mean, obviously this is a bit of relief as well when you
in those moments, despite the fact that it's a Champions League final and there are hundreds of millions of people watching and all the thousands of people in the stadium, and you put the ball down, you score the penalty, when you're walking back and you know the players on the other team as well as you do, do you look at them, do you smile at them, is your focus just on get back to my teammates and we carry on?
Yeah, you're so focused. We are just in the zone. Don't matter how many people are in the stadium or, you know, at home watching, you're just so zoned in. And to be fair, I think in that sense, it's weird, the penalty shootout, because you're always thinking about the next guy. Mm-hmm. And after being in the England team where we all missed, everyone missed, it's weird because you got the bench is kind of there and they're part of the team, but they're not, they can't affect the outcome. And you're like this little group of guys that basically decides the outcome of the game, right? You're like 5 or 10 guys. And some people want to be in that moment and some don't, you know, Maisie knows what it's like, you know, it's not always the best player. So I remember being in that England group and it being really quiet, eerily quiet. And it gets quiet because people are thinking about what's going to happen, right? And the thing, if I miss or anything, and then you start to get in your own head. And after being in that, and when we all missed, I just remember being really quiet, and I didn't think that was a good thing in that moment. So when Cristiano missed, and then I scored after, I made a point of trying to talk to always the next person, just to get them out of thinking, and overanalyze the situation. Look, it's an easy exercise. It's a penalty, you know. It's 12 yards. Just smash it in there. And, you know, it's easy for us because we all tend to like overanalyze. And I remember in that one with Rio and everyone talking to everyone, look, you're gonna score 100%, you're gonna score, pick your spot, and it's going in. And I remember just trying to make sure that everybody got a positive message before we went out, because it's easy to get in the moment and overthink and overanalyze. You know, there's a lot of people watching there, and you know, if I miss and all that. And I don't think you want that, you know. And I think that's where, if you got a really good dressing room with experienced guys, they can help the guys, you know, in those moments.
Did you have faith in everybody?
You know how it is. You got more faith in some people than others.
Like, ooh, Nani's coming up, Ando's coming up.
Oh, I mean, when Giggs Ando went up. But you know what? I love Ando for that. I mean, Ando was such a character. My word, what a boy. He used to come in, right? So we made a rule basically because of Ando in the gym. If you came into the gym, you had to do a set of something. Because he used to just come in and go on Clegg's computer and go on the internet. So, and he had the same agent as obviously as Cristiano and Nani. And Nani, they were the crazy pros, you know, doing everything. And Ando used to just come in to chat and go on the computer. So he used to come in and then he used to do 10 press ups and then he used to go sit on the computer. But the good thing about Ando was he had this crazy energy. He was just this little positive guy, you know, couldn't really speak English that well, but the lads loved him. And he had no fear. And it was cool that he went up, because when he went up, I think all the boys are thinking, poof, I'm not sure about this. But he just, you know, and that's what I love, the fact, just back yourself, you know, just back yourself. Even if you're not the most natural striker of the world, whatever, if you're confident, you know, that gives everyone else confidence.
Who selected the order? Because obviously it went to sudden death and so on. Was it all really pre-selected and you knew exactly what you were doing? Was it left to you in the group?
I mean, the boys basically picked themselves. You know, the gaffer knows who's the best penalty takers, obviously. And then there's some guys that don't want to take one. You know, that's just a fact. So it gets whittled down quite quickly. The only problem you kind of get is now, you see them now, where you get later on and then you're not sure who's going to take them. So then the boys got to step up, and to be fair to them, they all did, you know, because not everybody, you know, is, I guess, wants to take one in that situation.
Where were you on the list, Maisie? Like 9th, 10th?
I'd have been, yeah. Had a shit myself.
You just didn't.
Yeah, truthfully, yeah.
After Big Pete.
But I think it's one of them. You just got to trust yourself. I'd have whipped it as well.
Yeah.
I would. I think that's the safest.
How many penalties did you take in your career?
One against Leeds.
100% record?
100%. Well, yeah. 100% record, yeah.
Can't argue with that, can you?
Missing. Oh, no, I'm missing, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So what did it feel like when Van der Sar saved from Anelka?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, that's what you work for like 10 months, you know. You're just this big, big family and you kind of, you're chasing this, like, this dream, and then that happens and just, you know, pandemonium breaks out, you know, and Ed and everyone. It's just, it's one of those moments. I think people, you think about all the games that you play and all the goals or whatever, your whole career. People remember you probably on like 3, 4, 5 games in your whole career. You probably have that too, don't you? Yeah. People, you know, I see people on the street and they come up and they talk about, you know,
games, yeah.
Something, what happened. I was 12 when this happened, whatever, and my dad. And that's one of those moments. That's one of those games where that changes everyone's life, you know, all the players, all the staff. And I think to be able to share with everyone. And, you know, the thing I love about football is the behind scenes people, you know, the dressing room, the staff and the kit men and the masseurs and, you know, guys in the gym. And then to see what it means to them, you know, all the work everyone's put in. Everyone only sees us, but the work everybody puts in, and then the relief after that, you know, you can all sit together and celebrate and have a drink. And, you know, the kind of the guys from the past were there, you know, that had done so much. And it's just, you know, then that's what it's all about, you know, is to be able to be in that moment. And then also, it's hard enough to get there, but then to actually to go on and win. And I think it cements, you know, that group kind of forever, really.
That's a really interesting point that you make, that people remember you for 3 or 4 games. I really like that. What game would you say that United fans would mention to you from your time here? I know Sam's going to talk about the free kick, but for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it was tough because I only really got to play 1 year, you know, mm-hmm. and then after I only played 1 year, and it was an amazing year, you know. And I just think, obviously people, you know, talking about the Arsenal free kick and stuff and in the Champions League final, they were obviously the two highlight moments. But for me, you know, I think in that Champions League run, I played in like 5 different positions, and in each game I played a different one. You know, I played centre mid against Lyon, and then I played right wing against Roma, and then I played right back against Barca, and then I played right wing in the final, and then centre mid. So, you know, there was so many kind of elements to the season and different things, and I think they were all pretty cool moments, you know. But yeah, the Arsenal free kick was cool, just because I didn't get to take many, you know. Problem is, I always played in pretty good teams, so I could never get on a free kick. They had like 10 world class players ahead of me, so if I got one, I had to go in it, because if it didn't, I wouldn't get one for another few months. And then with England, Bex obviously was Bex, and then United we had, you know, Giggsy, and then you had Ronnie. So when I got one, I think obviously the boys knew I could take free kicks, but obviously I think most people that think defensive midfield player taking a free kick, what the heck's he doing there? But I remember because I scored that one before the Champions League final, I was practicing over the wall. Edwin was in goal. I was doing my one over the wall, and Cristiano was on the other side with his technique one, that one, which wasn't as consistent. Anyway, I put 9 out of 10 over the wall in the top corner, and Ed comes over to me after he finished. He said, oh, and if we get a free kick in the final, you got to take it. I said, Ed, I can't take it off Cristiano. You're like, you got to be joking me. Didn't think anything of it. And anyway, we get in the dressing room a week later, warming up, about to go out. Cristiano comes over. He says, oh, and if we get a free kick, it's yours. I was like, really?
Was he being pinched by Ed in the background?
No, but you know what? Cristiano wanted to win, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that about him. People think it's all about him and, you know, and all this. And yeah, of course, he wants to score. But in that moment, he must have thought, you know, whether rightly or wrongly, if we get one, all might be able to score, you know? And I love that about him. You know, people think it was all about him. It's not. You know, he cares mm-hmm. about the group. Two. I mean, we never got one, and I never got to take one.
But good story to tell, though.
But I never forget. I really appreciated that from him. Mm-hmm. And again, they're little things that the leaders got. The guys that, you know, lead the dressing, they're responsible for kind of everyone in a way, you know, mm-hmm. because they're you know, they're on another level. I love that about him.
Mm-hmm. After you won the Champions League, the England game, 3 days later, that must have been some dressing room walking in there. Bragging rights, or did you say anything?
Can you?
Of course you can. 100%. 100%. There must be a little bit of glowing, a little bit of,
Yeah,
did,
I mean,
did,
that, I think
did
they
you
could
talk
tell
about
by
it or anything.
I don't think so, no. I mean, and they, obviously they had Frank, JT, Ash, Bridgie, Joe. There was a lot of the boys there. Yeah, no, I don't think, I think we, because everybody kind of sits together and, you know, we.
Not doing any penalty shootouts or anything like that.
I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? I mean, JT was the only guy that slipped.
Yeah.
You know? And as much as, you know, we benefited from that, but also, you know, it's like, you know, it's heartbreak as well. Yeah. You know, you look at him and you put yourself in his shoes, you know, and somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. But that's football, you know, at that level. But yeah, it was probably slightly awkward, but, you know, we couldn't change it.
Speaking of Champions League wins, obviously you're not the only guy here with a Champions League winners medal. David May, 1999.
Yeah.
And you were there, right, with Bayern Munich?
I was there in the under-18s with Bayern. We had a tournament in Holland after, at Feyenoord. And we were going to go from there straight to the tournament. So we were up in this crazy corner. So we were on the other end of where the goals went in at the end. So we were in our club tracksuits. And I remember we were screaming our lungs out. I think we all lost our voices. I mean, Bayern played pretty well in the game, didn't they?
That's
it. Yeah. Should have, probably.
Yeah.
But then in the end, you know, just out of nowhere. And I remember we all just sat there. We were all just stunned. Like nobody spoke because it was just, it kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? And I mean, for that group, it was obviously for United, it was amazing. But for that, you know, Bayern group, it was a heartbreak. And it was cool to be there and actually see like football. You never dream you'll be in that yourself because it just looks so, big. You know, it seems somewhat so beyond you. That was an amazing, amazing day.
So you touched earlier on how really you only got that one season at United. When you look now, I imagine you have gained lots of information over the past years. What happened with your knees that ultimately meant that you couldn't keep playing?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I had tendonitis when I first came over, which is, you know, a lot of boys get that. And problem is, I always just played through everything, you know, I remember I broke my leg once and that you couldn't play through, but I tried to go back on, but then you realize, okay, that's not a good idea. So then at the time they kind of put me in a cast because of that leg break. And I think that's when I came back, I probably didn't have the strength in my quads and I started to develop this tendonitis. But anyway, it was something you can play through. And I managed that the whole season at United. So depending on, you know, I took painkillers and stuff to play because obviously I wanted to play every game. Then at the end of the season, we did some treatment, which, I thought I was going to be fit for the start of pre-season. And I pretty much never played again. I would have never, ever thought in a million years that could have ever happened because I consider myself like a really good pro. And it's weird, you know, I tried to come back, but I was never the same. You know, and there was never, I mean, I was just, my knee, I had so much pain. And then in the end, I had to have knee surgery on both sides. And my mentality was, I'll get back definitely. I was only 27, I think, I'll get back. But you know, I never really did. I just wanted to keep pushing and keep pushing and get back. And then I started, you know, started to get muscle injuries because I was like compensating for the pain in my knee. And it was super humbling in a way because up to 27, I probably had the best 7 years you could probably have ever had. And then the last ones were brutally humbling. So that was hard because I just felt like that team was so great. And I remember watching the Champions League final in Rome against Barca and then the one in London and just wishing I could have been out there to help, you know, because you feel like you could have helped. And I never got back to that. I never got back to it. So it was one good year, one really good year, but it just, shame couldn't have been more.
You've talked about your injury and how difficult of a time that was for you. How do you think about that time now compared to how you felt at the time?
You know, it's in a way, it's bittersweet, you know. It's changed my life. To this day, I don't run. So, you know, from being a kid that spent my whole life running, it was pretty humbling to be able to not do that and not perform your job and all that. But it was what it was, you know. It wasn't what I envisioned, wasn't what United envisioned. My dream was to just keep playing. I thought I was going to play till like Giggsy forever, you know, because I took it serious, my craft, you know. I was doing everything to maximize my potential to play. But I, you know, that injury I couldn't play through, and I was never really the same. So it's amazing how far your body can take you. But one thing I learned is your mind is much stronger than your body. And what helped propel me to get to a place to become a professional athlete from, you know, being a young kid, I worked at McDonald's when I was 14 as a chef because they were the only people that employ you, because I didn't want to ask my parents for money, to then to go and play in that stage as a pro. It was amazing how far my body took me. But then also I had the flip at the end where I couldn't, you know, my body couldn't perform anymore. And that was so humbling, you know, because you have been there and experienced it and felt it. And then even mundane things like walking around were a challenge. So, yeah, it was bittersweet because I had so many beautiful moments. But then in the end, I didn't get to finish the way I would have dreamed.
It almost seemed like you were going to get that second chance because you ended up at City.
Yeah.
And your first game, man of the match, smashed it. But there's only three more appearances after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, my mind was much stronger than my body. You know, I probably should have retired, but my mind wouldn't let me do that. You know, you just, amazing, you want to have a go, you know? And funny enough, so I'd done my rehab in the US with this guy, Alex McKechnie. He's the best physio I've ever seen in my life. And anyway, we had rehabbed and I didn't have an agent at the time. I did it on myself. So there was this narrative that I was injured. Anyway, so I came over I was going to sign for West Brom because the first guy that rang me while I was at United was Dan Ashworth. And I remember saying to Dan, I said, look, Dan, not right now, you know, I'm going to rehab because United had released me. I never forget going into the gaffer's office when he said they were going to release me. And I said to him, I'll play for free because I'm going to come back.
Yeah, I've read that. I was going to ask you genuinely offered to play for free.
I said, I'm going to play. Even though I probably shouldn't have, but I was going to have a go.
What did he say when you said that?
No, it hadn't worked, you know. I hadn't played for 3 years. I mean, it was, you know, they couldn't do it anyway. I understand that. But I got back and because Dan was the first guy to ring me, I said to him, I'll give you first shot to sign me because you're the first guy to ring me. And he was at West Brom at the time with Roy Hodgson. So I flew over, met Roy, met Dan, did the medical, passed. And it probably would have been the perfect thing for me because they would only have one game a week and I couldn't manage my training.
Yeah.
And anyway, the chairman at the time, I think it was just Jeremy Pearce, somebody tried to put a clause in to like sell me after if something had, you know, if I played well or whatever. And I don't know, something just didn't sit right with me, right? And Dan and Roy, I think they both agree with me. So I went home and I was still living in Old Edge at the time because I you know, with United, that's where I bought my house. And I went out for dinner that night, coincidentally, and I bump into David Platt. And David Platt was the assistant at the time at Man City, and he was my England under 21 coach. So I knew Platty. And he said, oh, what are you doing? I said, oh, I was going to sign for West Brom today, but, you know, they took the a little bit, so I didn't do it. And I was training on the local field in Old Edge, just keeping fit. And he said, well, you can come train with us. I said, no, that's not really that right. He said, are you fit? And I said, yeah, ish. I said, I've got to manage it, but... And anyway, and because he lived in Old Edge and so did Mancini, they came to my house the next day. And that's how it came about. I bumped into Platy in a pub in Old Edge. Next day they came to my house. I did a few medical checks. They said, yeah. And it was never on the cards for me. I wasn't that type, you know, to go. But I had moved to Manchester, played for Manchester United, and then I got released. You know, I had a house there. I lived there. It was a lot easier than getting up the M6 to West Brom. And then in the end, obviously, I think United fans weren't happy, but in the end, they gave me an opportunity to play football, you know, which I wasn't getting anywhere else. So I wasn't that type where I would have thought I would have ever gone to play for, you know, the team that I played for the rival. But it just kind of developed that way. And you know what? I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot. The medical staff were really good. One of the guys, Robin, he's at United now. He's exceptional. And I learned a lot. And I got back on my feet and I played a little bit. But
did you think you was actually going to get back then?
Yeah, they told me don't retire because I trained every day the last 6 months. And from where I was, to be able to train every day, I mean, that's all I wanted to do was just try and play. They wanted me to continue, but I just felt like I was chasing. Would you
play paying free as well? Or?
No, but I could manage it.
You manage it.
I used to go home and just, I remember, because I used to always like wear sweats and stuff because I used to ice my knees in the car on the way home. But look, everybody has sacrifice, you know, at that level. I don't think not many people play games.
With no pain, that's what I was without thinking. Everybody plays with pain.
You think about Johnny and all of us, anybody that's been in the game a long time, you have injuries, but obviously this time you got to work around more. But I never, you know, in the end, that was my job to play football. You know, obviously I would have rather done it, you know, here for a very long time, but you know, I couldn't. And then obviously somebody presents an opportunity to you. And I think when I meet United fans or then I chat to them, once people talk to you and then they understand more. Whereas people that obviously have that tribal, you know, the red and blue, and I completely understand that. And you got to respect the history of both teams. But ultimately in the end, it's a job also for us. And I didn't play any different if I played in a shirt for Bayern Munich or Manchester United or England. And so I think it was an honor to be able to play in some of those teams, but I didn't get to finish the way I would have hoped.
So I suppose when you look back at your career, not so much that you have regrets, but things you just had wanted to go differently. But you don't seem like the kind of guy that lives with regrets.
No, I don't. You know what? I don't have any memorabilia in my house. I don't have any trophies. I don't have any shirts. They're all in moving boxes in my office. Not to say that I'm not proud of those things, but the past is the past. You know, I was, you know, trophies come with, you know, being a part of amazing teams with great coaches and stuff. But I just think the journey was so amazing, you know, from where I grew up as a kid to then to go play in Germany and learning a new culture, a new language, and then to come over to England and then playing for England and United. And if somebody had told me I would be able to do that up to 27, I would have said, you've been drinking something really strong. But you know what? It just shows you, you know, you just got to chip away. And obviously the start was amazing. The finish was heartbreaking. But you know, that's life. You know, I can't get it back. I did my best while I could. And, you know, I don't think there was any more in the tank.
You would never have thought you'd be on the Manchester United podcast either.
You know what? I've seen them. And it's a privilege to be a part of the history of this football club. I was so honored to play here and represent this shirt. And it's a privilege to be here with you guys. You know, I think United represents something so strong. I was saying earlier to Jules when I was walking in, I probably bump into somebody once a day and they ask me about Manchester United. Because if you've played there, it's a part of your history, you know, and it means so much to people and people care and people want to see it back to what it was. So, you know, I think we're all part of some people longer than others at Maisie, but everybody came here with, you know, it was a dream to play here and play in the state in front of fans. And it was an honor, you know, to play and then also still be a part of that, come back and be around you guys.
Beautiful.
Unbelievable story.
Yeah,
it's been
amazing.
A pleasure to listen to it.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
That little assessment he did there of his career at the end about starting in Canada and Germany, that was wonderful, wasn't it?
Yeah, as I said before, it blows my mind that he went to Germany at just 15 years old. Different language, like that is so daunting. And the career that he went on to have, although it was cut short, but the way he speaks about it.
Do you think it seems more daunting? Because actually we've spoken to so many people who have done that, but they've done that and moved to Manchester. Do you think it's because he's English? And
no,
we're not,
I think it's because he's moving continent.
Yeah,
that's
tall,
major.
Yeah.
We haven't spoken to that many people who have done that from 15 years
into, old. Into a totally foreign country as well.
Sometimes not like France to here or, but it's not that far really, is it? When you think about it.
No, I suppose it's not. It's true.
But yeah, I know what you mean. You're not used to English people making that move.
No, so it seems stranger maybe.
Could have played for Canada. Could have played for Wales.
Yeah.
Bridge Hall's England.
Do you know what? When he was talking about the penalty shootouts in the Champions League final, like I could really feel like, imagine the stress of standing there.
Yeah, but he wasn't stressed.
No, he was just talking about it.
He had such a good attitude
stressed.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fascinating though, to listen to it.
Sam, I've seen you at the top of all-time football trying to take penalties. and you're stressed.
Yeah, I'm an overthinker.
Yeah, yeah, you are an overthinker.
Yeah, you wouldn't want me in that scenario.
No, certainly not.
I really, really enjoyed that chat, and the way he speaks about football and things off the pitch as well is so impressive.
But also, like Maisie picked up on it in the podcast, we're talking about his time at Manchester United, but what a team he was at Bayern Munich.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment of Steffen Effenberg picking him up, saying, you're here to replace me. I mean, that's amazing.
Mentality, innit? You talk about upbringings and having somebody to show you the ropes, and every day getting kicked 10 bells out of, stands in good stead. So yeah, very good. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. It was an absolutely great one. We'll be back again next week. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can. The address is unitedpodcast@manunited.co.uk, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
See you later.